Welcome back to The Comeback with Brenda Dennehy. Joining me today is psychotherapist Lauren Golden once again for another episode of Comeback Confidential. Over the past while, I've received so many emails from listeners sharing the challenges they're facing, everything from relationship struggles and heartbreak to addiction, grief, anxiety and ADHD. Many people aren't ready to share their story publicly, and that's completely okay. So Comeback Confidential is a space where we can discuss those stories anonymously, offering support, perspective and honest conversation while protecting your identity. Today. If you'd like us to discuss something you're going through, email us at thecomebackwithbrenda@gmail.com and everything remains completely confidential. So Lauren, are you ready?
Always.
Yes. How have you been? You've had a few couple of media appearances.
I have. It's been, do you know what now? It's been a busy kind of month and a half. And it's so funny. I was saying on my holidays, I was like, I'll take it easy now when I come back. I was bloody on to the Independent yesterday. I'm here today. I just love it. I think there's this kind of to and fro in for me, I think, because I want the story, I want the awareness, and then I'm very cautious of like overexerting myself and kind of not putting myself out there because I'm nervous too or anything like that, but just I have to look at the kind of pros and cons of it all, you know. Mm-hmm. But these have been really lovely experiences and I've been very grateful, and loads of people got on to me and were like, Daniel would love it, like, you know, my brother, like he would love that, his face is on the telly and his face has been on the newspapers, and it's been a beautiful way to honour him, I think, in the last month or so.
And Lauren, honestly, no, and I often say it, you are remarkable in your work. It's just the way you communicate.
Thanks so much.
And we're big fans of you here in Red FM, recording. Aww. From Red FM. Like Vivian is...
I'm weak for Vivian.
I know, she's gone to a wedding today and I was like, oh, Lauren's coming in tomorrow. She's like, oh, I love Lauren.
Oh, I love her too. She's so lovely.
It's how you communicate. And people love you on the podcast. You just have a way about you. And I, do you know what I think it is? You don't do like with technical wording or anything jargon that people don't understand. You say it how it is, and that's what, like, if you're like, that's from Morning Ireland or something.
Yeah, 100%.
Not here. No. We just need people easy listening and like stuff that goes on in everyday life. The first topic I have is, and I this has happened to me as well in the past. A lot of girls and men, this has happened to us. So it's love bombing.
Love bombing.
I can't wait for you to get your teeth into this.
Yeah.
Here we go. Hi, Brenda and Lauren. I'm hoping you might discuss something that has really knocked my confidence. A man from my past came back into my life recently. From the moment he got back in touch, everything felt intense. The messages were constant. He told me how much he had missed me, how special I was, and spoke about a future together very quickly. To be honest, I got swept up in it. He made me feel wanted, valued, and important. It felt like something I'd been waiting for a long time. But then, almost overnight, everything changed. The messages became less frequent, the effort disappeared, the affection stopped, and now I feel like I'm the one chasing answers and wondering what happened. The hardest part is what I'm questioning myself. Was any of it real? Did I imagine the connection? How can somebody go from seeming so interested and invested to suddenly pulling away? I've been reading about love bombing online and wondering if that's what's happened. Was he genuinely interested and then changed his mind? Or was he more in love with the idea of me than the reality of building a relationship? I'm finding it difficult not to take it personally, and my confidence has definitely taken a hit. How do you move on from something that felt so real at the time, even if it was only for a short while?
Oh, it's so hard, isn't it? And like you said, so many of us have been through it as well. I find myself looking at the email and wanting to put it into sections nearly. So there's the clear hurt and disappointment, and I think it's really important to raise awareness on this. Sometimes when we have an experience like this and it wasn't a fully fledged relationship or long-term relationship and it ends, there's nowhere to kind of put that disappointment. I think we're just kind of left with it. We don't want to bring it up too many times with friends. There's a huge amount of shame and embarrassment around it because we feel rejected. But actually, it's such a difficult thing to go through. And when I saw it on the topics, I was actually buzzing because I think it's a really important thing to speak about, you know. There's loads of questions in it. So the one thing that stuck out to me in terms of her story was it was something that she had waited a long time for, and she felt special and important. And isn't that just something that we'd all love to feel? And it's something that whenever we think we experience it, something outside of us telling us that we're important and that we're valuable, it makes us feel so good. It's like an easy access to self-esteem, but it can be very short-lived if our self-esteem and the idea that we're important comes from anything outside of ourselves, you know. I think there's lots of different reasons why people love bomb, and this does sound like love bombing, right? I know the buzzwords that we hear online straight away you might have someone say, look, it's narcissism. Like it's someone with like narcissistic personality disorder. And sometimes it is, right? But we have to remember that narcissistic personality disorder is like 1% of the population. And there's actually other reasons that people love bomb. And I think it's nice to put it fully on them and to be like, okay, they have this personality disorder and it's definitely not me, but you don't need that. Like this is what's happening now. The person is looking for a reason. The reason was never you in the first place. No matter what we come up, if I had this man here now in the room, I'm presuming it's a man, if I had this man here in the room and I was to dissect him and get an answer, it would never be you. Do you know, like that's never going to be at the bottom of it. So either there's a few different scenarios that might be happening. Either the person does get a thrill out of the validation and having someone want them and seeing the control, or, you know, like being able to shift the narrative really quickly and then disappear and be wanted. Maybe that's the motive and someone actually intends to harm. Or like, you know, there are people who grow up and they see certain types of relationships and they learn from them and they model after them. Maybe that's the kind of relationships they saw. Maybe it's someone with like an anxious avoidant attachment style. That's like, I need you, I need you, I need you. Oh my God, this feels so real. I have to go. But regardless, like how awful is it? And what a hit to your self-esteem when someone just disappears like that. Do you know?
Terrible.
It's so bad.
Can I just a quick one there ask you, what's the difference between love bombing and ghosting then?
Okay, so love bombing is, so there's a few signs of love bombing. Love bombing is when you come in, so you might love bomb and then enter into like potentially like an abusive relationship and never ghost. So this person was love bombed and then ghosted, do you know? So the love bombing side is the, you might have someone who's just puts you on a pedestal, like is obsessed just straight away, buys you loads of gifts, talks about your future, I've never met anyone like you. And I think this is the danger of us seeking a sense of being special. And I think it's something we're sold from a very young age in all of like the movies and the media. It's like you're the chosen one out of everyone despite all the odds, like you're just so special. And you know what I think is the most freeing thing ever? Like not wanting to be special, not wanting to be any more important or less important than anybody else. It's so freeing. It's like, what if I'm just me? And if someone values that, they value that. I don't need to be special. And I would really encourage this person to kind of like get to the crux of that, because if they were able to build something and then take it with them when they left, it might be really nice for you to be able to build that up yourself and have something that no one can come and give you and then take away. Things like that now, a sense of importance, like why aren't you important now? You know what I mean? And you might know that on a rational level, but then in your heart right now, you're obviously feeling really wounded because this is so hard. And I think anyone who's been through would say how hard it is, you know.
Can I ask both the man then, and I know you can't answer for all the situations, and it could be a woman who might love bomb as well.
Mm.
When they're doing it, do you think sometimes they actually mean it? They get so into it and they don't purposely, like, I'm going to hurt this girl. Or they're like, oh, look, is it maybe they've got the ick or they're just not into them anymore? Some of them don't purposely mean to do it.
No, they don't. And I think that could be harder because then someone might try and turn it and be like, well, then it must have been my fault. There has to been something lacking in me. And that's not the truth. So I think that's why we don't see that side of it much online. But some people are really afraid of the feeling of commitment. Let's say I've worked with people who've been on the other side and they were like, I got really close, but I just wasn't ready. And it'll have nothing to do with the person. I'd often have, actually, people still long for the person, still speak really well of the person. But regardless, when I say this, I want to be really careful. That doesn't mean you should give this person more chances just because there might be something going on for them. So two things can exist at once. I can have compassion for the fact that the other person might lack like relationship skills for whatever reason. And then also that you don't deserve that. Really don't deserve that. That's awful.
And just as by the way, before we move on, you know, in certain situations where, like, I know people and they've been going on for like 3 years or so, and the guy might break up, look, I just wasn't ready. Then within 6 months, they're after meeting someone else. And they're like, realistically, that person just wasn't their person. They were ready. Like, do you think that's the truth of it?
Yeah.
And I know you can't dissect it when you're not aware of the relationship, but I'm saying past, there's so many people I know where they were going out with someone for 3 or 4 years. Oh yeah, look, I didn't want to get married, or, you know, I wasn't ready to settle down. And then they're gone off with someone else.
It's so hurtful. It really
is.
Is
that just, like, do you think sometimes the excuse is just, it's you, like, it's not, I am ready, but it's just not you.
Yeah, and I would, again, like, I'm very careful to because I've been on the other side of that, we all have, I think, where someone might not choose us and they choose somebody else. Yeah. And it's so hurtful because you're trying to like do the math. You're like, what is it? What was it? And we can't, we're not robots. Like, we're not maths equations. There's so much about us and another person. Imagine you have two unique people, complicated, unique people who somehow have to fit together for both people to see this life working out well for them, you know. Yeah. So people leave and it's not because you lack anything, it's because the other person might not see the relationship going the same way. That, but we see that a lot, don't we? Someone mm-hmm. then jump into another relationship. I think that's a character thing though, isn't it? Like, really and truly, if you step back from that, is that the kind of person that you want to share your life with? You know, someone who can leave, jump into something else, not have clear communication. You know, a lot of the time when someone's, because this person has now said that she's been waiting for a long time, and I think nowadays, because the dating world is so brutal, I think a lot of people are in this space. But sometimes I ask my clients, I'm like, if you were to look back so on like the last 3-4 people, would you like to spend the rest of your life with them? And they're like, oh shit, no.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, but so why are we spending all this time figuring out why you weren't enough for them? Like, are they actually enough for you in your mind? Like, do they feel good enough for you? And they're like, not really. We focus so much on the rejection because we have fears about what that means about us. But really, like, look at it more holistically. Like, there's two humans involved. Is the other person right for you? You know?
So true. And you know what? I spent years thinking, oh, I'm too much for him now. But now I actually say to myself, you're not enough for me.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
And still the odd time I'd say, if my friend met a guy or anything, I'd be like, I hope, no, I'm not too much for him. I kind of still say that because I want my friends, fellas, to like me. And not, to be honest with you, I said it to my friend lately, goes, I hope, no, he doesn't think I'm a dope. Will he think I'm a dope now?
No way.
Because I've been, like, sometimes there will be friends that might be with guys and they make me feel stupid.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As in, oh, she's too much of a thing, whatever. But, like, I'm sorry. Well, if they're going to end up with some fella like that, then I don't really
100%
want to.
100%. No, that's an awful person to be around. I love that. I want that on a t-shirt.
I say that now because my sister used to be saying it before. I was like, I'm just too much for him. I need, or else tone it down. I just get a fella sent me before, tone it down. But you laugh at this. I usually don't talk about myself on the other podcast, but here, I will with you. Yeah. But I said, and I don't want anyone to feel sorry for me, but I said this to my friend Karen the other night. I said, Karen, do you know what? I was looking at Winston the other night, the dog. And I looked at him going, do you know what? I think that you, Jake and Rocco, are two other dogs, and apart from my father and my two brothers, are the only actual males who've ever really loved me. I actually don't think any guy that I was going out with or in a situation, Larna came out of nowhere, but I actually don't think, I didn't feel sorry for myself. I was kind of laughing, kind of looked at the dog, kind of going, well, at least I have the dog. But I genuinely don't, I have been in love, but I don't think, I actually said to myself, I don't think, I was unrequited. I don't think any of these were actually in love with me.
I find that so hard to believe. You're like majorly lovable. It's so hard to believe. So like your definition of love when you talk about dogs is like, how unconditional is that? Like, you don't have to do anything. You just enter the door and they're like, oh my God. What do you, is love for you that? Like the kind of like unconditional. You've never felt loved.
I maybe with one of them, but the other one was, I don't know what that was. That was abusive more than anything.
Okay.
Not physically, but we'll say mentally.
Doesn't matter.
But I don't think the other person, and I don't feel, it's mad, I don't feel sorry for myself. No. Like I said it to Karen passing, and I'm saying it on here, a couple of thousand people hear it. I don't, and I genuinely think, and I always have to warn, like, don't say no, Brenda. Like, I genuinely think I'm meant for this world to be on my own. And I'm totally fine with that. Not alone as a loner, but like as in relationship wise, I genuinely think I'm meant to sail through this world on my own. And I'm happy with that.
You're barely halfway through your life, so we don't know.
Exactly, Lauren.
You know, when we look back, like, would any of them have been like the perfect fit for you?
Do you know what? I spoke to my friend Samantha recently about a guy who was kind of the love of my life, and kind of my addiction really ruined it. And I was very bitter for years. And she said to me, Brenda, if you met him now, would he be the one for you? And it just opened up my eyes. And I was like, no, he wouldn't. And that's exactly what you said a couple of minutes ago.
It's so true. When we actually just shift the focus, we're like, oh, actually, no. Yeah. I'm so caught up in the fact that they didn't want me and how shit that made me feel, that I didn't actually evaluate them.
Yeah. You know? And that person chose someone else at the time as well.
This idea of being chosen is really difficult, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It really is.
What this lady said, like, special.
Yeah. And I love what you said there about not wanting to be the special one, or would you kind of say that as well, for what, not wanting to be the best at something?
Yeah,
there's a relief in that, isn't there?
There's so much relief when you just drop it. It's like, all right, Grant.
And that's not to say that you don't want to do good in life or do well.
But you don't need to come at it from like, I need to be like special. Like you can achieve things because you have goals and you're like, great. But like, are any of us, I saw something the other day, look, we know everything that's going on around the world at the minute, like, and how much life is such a lottery. We don't know where we're going to be born. We don't know what kind of life we're going to have from the get-go. Obviously, when we get older, we have more choices. Some of us do. But yeah, like, are we any better or worse than each other, really? The crux of it. Like, you spoke earlier about knowing people from different walks of life that maybe you would have had like stigma around before. And then when you get to know them, you're like, oh shit, these are me. Like,
yeah,
they're just like me, do you know?
Yeah. Right. Okay. This is another one here, Lauren, about domestic abuse.
Yeah.
Hi Brenda and Lauren, I'm writing because I don't know what else to do. My sister has been in an on-again, off-again relationship for years with a man who treats her terribly. He constantly puts her down, controls who she sees, checks up on her, and makes her feel like she's the problem whenever they argue. From the outside, it's obvious that the relationship is unhealthy, but every time she leaves, she ends up going back. Our family has tried everything. We've listened, supported her, offered her a place to stay, helped her move out, and spent countless nights picking up the pieces when things have fallen apart. The hardest part is watching someone you love lose confidence in themselves. She used to be outgoing, independent, and full of life. Now it feels like she's walking on eggshells all the time. I know I can't force her to leave, but it's heartbreaking standing by and watching the same cycle repeat itself over and over again. Sometimes I feel angry with him, sometimes I feel frustrated with her, and then I feel guilty for feeling that way. How do you support someone who keeps going back to a relationship that is hurting them? Is there anything family members can do, or do we simply have to wait until they're ready to make that decision for themselves? And that's just signed with Jay.
Yeah. Oh, like, I think I have to say first, because I didn't see it in the email, this is an abusive relationship. And I think it's important to call it that, you know. You can have compassion. You might know this. You might know your sister's partner a long time and you might have compassion. But I'm seeing the kind of, like, he treats her badly. He puts her down. It's not healthy. But it's actually, this is an abusive relationship. And I think it's important to kind of name it as that. And when you're looking at an abusive relationship, there's a ripple effect to that. You've seen it because you've seen, like, your sister deteriorate over time, lose her spark, lose her confidence. And it sounds like you've all been trying to be there as a family. And you sound burnt out, to be honest. You sound really burnt out. When it comes to, so the guidelines, right? If you were to look at, like, the guidelines on the likes of women's aid, it's that you stay supportive and you stay as kind of allies, and that you don't force someone to make decisions, but that you don't think you're the person's only support or that you're the rescuer in the situation. Because we know, kind of like with addiction, that relapse is quite high in domestic abuse relationships. So it's almost the boundaries that need to come in there emotionally and some kind of structure. Hopefully you're not the only person that she's leaning on for support. I think safety first and foremost, especially if there's kids involved. But at the end of the day, it's about figuring out how you can keep yourself well while also being a support. I'd really strongly advise a way that you can keep the relationship, because we know this strengthens the chances of the person being able to leave eventually. But also find a way that this is a little bit more spaced out from you and your world, and that you can find wellness within your own life, because it sounds like this has been wearing you down. Way easier said than done, by the way, when you love someone and you care about someone. But sometimes we get caught up in these cycles of wanting to rescue someone, wanting a better life for someone, but it's her decision right now. And she sounds like she's very little control or agency. So, you know, I suppose given any ultimatums and things like that, it just, unfortunately, it doesn't work. I wish it did, but it doesn't work.
What do they say? Do they say it's like eight, it takes a woman up to eight times to leave?
Yeah, at least seven times, yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And you can see why. I mean, there's loads of different reasons. Like, I've grown up in that world and I've seen it, and like sometimes there's a financial kind of financial control. Sometimes it's about beliefs around the kids and what their life might look like, or fear for the kids. There's also fear to life, especially if there's violence, you know. There's real risks that come with leaving someone who's physically abusive. And then, like, with this person, right, so she said her confidence has gone down. Interesting, it kind of comes back to what we were just speaking about in the last one. But when you are the person who gives someone else confidence and you chip and you chip and you chip, it's like the self-esteem is gone unless you're there to give it back to them. And when we have no self-esteem, it's very hard to make decisions independently. You know, we lean on other people to give us those answers. And then I think something that a lot of people overlook is that the fact that there's love involved. You know, we can love people who hurt us, and love is very powerful. It's really, really difficult to let go of.
That's what you said there. We can love people that hurt us.
Yeah.
This is very true, isn't it?
It is. It is.
And then, you know, when I actually mentioned about an ex of mine, and I kind of just said, oh yeah, it was only mental abuse. You were like, still abuse. Mm. I think people, when they hear, they think, was he hitting her? Like, was he, do you know, as in, yeah, they think like coercive control and all that. It doesn't have to be just physical violence.
Not at all.
Sometimes the mental abuse, I think that it's silent and you don't see the physical scars for people. I think it shouldn't be, some people might dismiss it. I dismissed what that guy was doing to me, but like, I suppose, look, it wasn't as serious as something like this. But I think people dismiss it too easily.
Cut this out if you want to, but why wasn't it as serious as something like this?
Oh no, I don't mind having it in. Well, I suppose he would have been only just nasty to me. Nasty to me in passing comments. I would, look, we were young and I suppose, yeah, I never really thought about it. I just would have really knocked my confidence.
Yeah.
Like, even call me fat at one stage. And I was overweight at the time. I mean, when I look back, I'm like, what the hell did I do?
That's awful.
Like, seriously, why did I... I was young. That person since got in touch and they wanted to meet me to apologise. And I'm very open to, and especially in recovery, I'm very open to making amends, big into it. But I actually was just like, I have no interest in meeting you. And I, for a moment, I was kind of like, Brenda, like, why don't you? I actually have zero, like, there's nothing. And it's not like, I never want to speak to you again. I'm so unbothered by you.
100%.
I am so unbothered by it. I kind of think then, is there something wrong with me then that I just, because I'm all about making amends?
No.
But him, I'm just like, oh my God, why would it be better to meet you?
I know, not at all. And like, was it any bit validating that he reached out?
No. I was actually there going, what do you want?
Okay. So even though like you were like, I don't want to see him, did it validate anything that you're like, okay, that actually was bad. That wasn't in my head. That was awful the way he treated me.
Oh yeah. But yeah. I don't know. It's there's someone else that reached out and did apologise. And I says, they all come out of the woodwork.
They do.
They do. Always, and yeah, he apologised. And but then he kind of just said, well, at the time you were like mad for the drink and stuff like that. And I was like, yeah, but you don't realise what you did to me, you know. But but the other fella, I don't know what it is. I was like, no, I don't want to, like, forget it.
Yeah, it's almost like, it feels like it's in a bit of a box, because you said, oh, it's not as bad as this, but you described it almost the same. Like you said,
there was
lowered
bad.
Your confidence.
And
I'm reading it out, and that's what she said, you know. Like, I think anyone who wants us to feel smaller, that is abuse. There's no other word for it. That is abuse, you know. To use emotional tactics to make someone feel small is abuse, you know.
Lauren, you have such a way with words. No. You say, but even that now, that's a little nugget now in my head. That's powerful. There's people going to be listening to this going, oh my God, that person is doing that to me. And that's abuse.
I often see people come in and they sit across from me and they constantly minimise it. Yeah. You know, you said earlier, oh, like, they didn't hit me now. I'm like, okay, that had no place there. That's irrelevant. But what did they do? Yeah. You know, there's no scale of it. It's nearly hard to put into words, but you'll feel it. You'll feel the emptiness after going through something like that. You'll feel the wounds, and they're so internal and silent, like you said, but it chips and it chips. And you said earlier, what was I doing? No one does this on day one. At the start, you have something like what we looked at earlier, like the love bombing, the kind of like, oh my God, you're amazing, or great fun. And people can do that for a certain amount of time, and then it'll be like one comment, two comments. I feel like if it all hits someone on day one, they're a lot less likely to stay. But if you do it little by little over time, it's like, oh well, I forgave him for that, so it's probably okay. And then like it builds, it's almost like your tolerance for abuse rises. And that's what I see it get worse and worse over time. So it's no wonder that people stick around. It's nearly like, do you ever hear that analogy of like the crab in the boiling water?
No, tell me.
So if you put a crab in, I'm vegetarian now, so I hate this, right? But if you put a crab in a boiling pot, and let's say you boil the pot first, so that pot is scorching hot and you throw the crab into it, it jumps out immediately, it doesn't stay. But if you put the crab in full of water and it's room temperature and you boil it slowly, it stays. It doesn't jump out.
Oh.
Yeah, and it dies that way, you know? Yeah, and I think it's a good analogy for...
Yeah, it really, really
for
is.
For domestic violence, because it's over time. You don't even notice it until you're unconscious, you know?
That's really hit me there now.
Yeah, yeah.
When you were talking there, something came into my head as well, and I don't have an email. Do you know what? Me and Vivian were chatting about this. We're like, we'd love to even do something on the show about this, but I'd love to do something the next episode. And this is... How do we describe it now? It was kind of like... bitchy girls in your 30s and 40s, not even bitchy. What was it? Like, I'll give you the analogy. So I was meant to go down to, I was meant to go on a hike. I was invited to a hike. And I was all excited about the hike, right? And I was going to bring in my wonderful friend Karen. And we were all excited. And she actually doesn't know because I told her another reason because I was quite embarrassed, actually. But I was invited to hike and I was all excited and got onto that person about the hike. Now, I met this person on another hike. I didn't know her, but she knew me from Instagram or whatever, and spent the morning like chatting, having the crack. I'd be a very friendly person when I meet you and be inclusive as well. And, you know, just be really nice and sound. And I suppose I'm wary that I don't want anyone to think, oh, that, when I suppose when I rocked up, I didn't want her to think, oh, this one here now, you know, some people might come in with like, oh, this one here now thinks she might be A, B, C, D. I know I shouldn't care, but I'd never want to come across that way. Anyway, text about the hike, and I was told Karen we're going on a hike because I said to that person, oh, I'll bring my friend Karen because she loves hiking, and got a message anyway, basically, and like, I'm really embarrassed about it, but got a message back anyway, basically kind of saying that, yeah, hi, blah, blah, blah. I've actually decided to keep the hike to people I actually really know well. Sorry about that. Basically, kind of got uninvited from the hike. When I got that message, right, I actually looked on WhatsApp. And you can see on WhatsApp, you can see it come in without opening it. And I swear, and I know it's only a small thing. I actually was there and it was a Sunday evening. It actually ruined my Sunday evening. And I was there going, and I was too, Karen doesn't even know. I made up a different story to Karen because I was too embarrassed because I was thinking, and like, I'm not the only one who thinks this. I was thinking Karen will think, what's Brenda doing the hike to her? What happened since? And I was like, well, Karen might want to be friends with me if she, this is the hit now. This is school grown stuff in my 40s. Got uninvited from the hike. Now, I was like, I felt crap about myself Sunday evening. I was like, well, she doesn't like me now after. I was, do you know, I was there going, she doesn't like me after I went down my way to be super sound and nice on that hike to her when I could have gone on that hike because I would have turned up on my own. I could have been like, oh, look, I don't really want to be talking to anyone. I just kind of want to do anything. But I went out of my way to be sociable.
Oh, my goodness. That's actually.
And I got uninvited from the hike. I got uninvited from the hike.
That's shocking behaviour.
Is that like what situations like that? And like, I would love the next podcast to do something more, and I know you can't, you're not a mind reader, but something like that then.
Yeah, I mean, all I want to say is that's not you anyway, but it's so easy for you to sit there now and dissect everything, and there must have been, and like that makes someone feel so, I mean, I just think this is basic shit, lads. Like, I wish things stayed in our school, like our primary school and secondary school. Sometimes it doesn't. I wish it was the first time I was hearing this as an adult, but it isn't. And it's awful. It really is awful. But you know what it is? It's like when we're adults, we almost feel embarrassed to share it, but the feelings are the same. Who wants to feel like rejected or you know, that you're annoying or too much? It's awful.
Yeah,
awful.
I felt crap. That is so crap. Strange. As in, I didn't want to tell Karen about it. She'll hear it now from this. I might as well tell her on the way home. Like, look, Karen, we actually got uninvited from the hike.
No, that's actually lousy. But I hate that.
Me and Vivian were saying that because I was telling her and we were like, this thing still goes on in your 30s and 40s. It's just not the school.
It does. It does. No, it really isn't. I just think we don't speak about it as adults. We don't admit when we feel a bit left out or, you know, we don't.
That you mightn't be picked for something.
Yeah,
and actually, John, who we know from John Isherwood, he sets up the podcast here for us. John came in the other day. Now, I'm not staff in Red FM. I do cover. I was staff here before. But he came in. He was like, oh, Brenda, there's a summer barbecue next week. Will I add you to the email? And I was like, really? He goes, yeah, come on, share one of us. And I was nearly crying.
Aww.
Not, I'd be like that anyway, but I was like, how considerate was that? It's then that he's including me, and then but I got uninvited. But in my head then I was like, you got uninvited for the hike.
Bless your humour anyway, but that's actually terrible. These are things I'm teaching my 4-year-old. Like, I can't imagine why people in their 30s and 40s are excluding someone, whatever, about like making future plans and making a decision then, but to like actually uninvite someone, you know, that's going to make someone feel like shit. Like, even if your light and your brightness was threatening for anyone, like, suck it up. It's, you don't own the mountain, first of all. And do you know what I mean? It's just, it's going to make someone feel awful. And oh, you just wouldn't do it, or you wouldn't.
Do you know what I actually said to Vivian? I said, even if that was me, and even if I had organised the hike, and even if I had invited someone, and even if the girls were kind of like, oh God, you're not bringing that
so
one.
So true.
I actually would have still said, look, I'll be the one to talk to her. I can't uninvite her.
I carry on my back.
Like, look, I'll talk to her. You don't have to talk to her, whatever. But like, I can't uninvite her, lads.
No,
it would kill me.
Of course not.
I would. I'd be. And I was like, no, Vivian, I couldn't do that. Like, it would absolutely kill me.
No.
Like, I just couldn't.
I'm a boundary person, right? But that I would never do that. Never.
No, I just couldn't.
Never. I actually wouldn't. Even if it was, like you said, even if it was someone who was just difficult to be around, I genuinely would never. And especially, like, it's awful that you went into it with the fear that ended up coming true. Like, it's just so unfair. No wonder it ruined your Sunday. You went in being like, and I'm seeing this, like, as a bit of a pattern, but, like, I'll tone it down a little bit, you know, I won't try in, like, and then you still got this kind of a response. Yeah. It's very hard for that not to hit your self-esteem.
And I, you know what, I was kind of accepted. And I woke up thinking about it then.
Of course you were.
You were uninvited from the hike, I said to myself.
It's good to say it out loud, okay? I was uninvited from the hike.
But she was a nice girl. She's a nice girl. She was a nice girl. Anyway, she probably listened
to
this.
It's not a nice thing to do.
No, it was. I felt really sad. Anyway, right, I've one more.
Okay.
I've two long ones here, but I think I'll go with the first one.
Okay.
The one about the sister's addiction stolen 40 years from our family.
Yeah.
Are you happy to go with that one?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Brenda, thank you for taking the time to listen to my voice notes. You've helped me in more ways. I'm actually going to edit out this part because I actually don't like reading the good stuff about myself.
You never.
I don't. And I'm going to edit out
this
part.
I'm challenging you. No, I'm challenging you.
No, I can't.
No, you've already heard now in the pod, guys. Do it.
Why am I like that now? But I see, I don't want people thinking, oh, she's fucking nuts and there. No, she thinks she's great.
What do you mean? Like, this is like.
Would you read it out?
Absolutely. 1,000,000%.
Okay,
absolutely.
So if someone was like, oh, Lauren, can you read out this email if you're on your Instagram? Would you read out that?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Right, and do it because you're here.
Do it.
Brenda, thank you for taking the time to listen to my voice notes. You've helped me in more ways than I can explain. I followed you for a long time, and when you began sharing your story and others, it gave me something I hadn't felt in years, hope. I want to share my story, but from the other side of addiction, the family that lives in it every single day. My sister is in her early 50s and has been taking drugs since she was 16. I was 9 at the time. This has been part of my life for as long as I can remember. I grew up alongside it. We had a childhood many people could dream of. There are 4 of us, and 2 of my siblings were involved in drugs, but the sister I'm speaking about, her addiction runs deep. It has shaped decades of our lives. I love her, I always will, but there is also a part of me that feels anger, sometimes even hate, and that's hard to admit. Maybe it's because I can see the life she could have had, the life she still could have. Instead, she's barely existing, living as a functioning addict, and we are all pulled into that reality with her. My parents are in their 70s now, and every single day begins the same way for them. Worry. Before they even get out of bed, she is their first thought. Is she okay today? What mood will she be in? Will she be kind, or will she be angry, violent, unpredictable? When she calls, it can shift the entire atmosphere of their home in seconds. And when she hangs up, she leaves behind silence filled with fear. She has told us stories, being mugged, losing her wallet, being in danger, only for us to later find out they weren't true. I've sat sick with worry for entire weekends, believing something terrible had happened, only to learn it was another lie. That kind of emotional whiplash does something to you. It chips away at trust, at stability, at your sense of reality. Over the years, we've dealt with so much violence, both physical and emotional. Thousands of euros stolen, jewellery gone, calls from the guards, the drugs unit searching my parents' home, phone calls from hospitals, suicide attempts, overdoses. Each incident doesn't just affect her. It ripples through all of us. It leaves damage behind. And then there's the judgment. People talk about her. They look down on her. They speak as if she's nothing. And by extension, they look at us the same way. But she is still a person. She is still my sister. And despite everything, I can't stop loving her. I actually get emotional reading this.
Sad.
That's the part people don't see. The love that exists alongside the anger, the exhaustion and the hurt. What hurts just as much is what we've lost along the way. I've missed events, important moments, pieces of my own life because of the constant pull back into hers. A phone call, can you come home? She's off the rails and everything else stops. I spent years picking up the pieces, trying to hold things together, trying to protect my parents, trying to protect her. And now I carry a quiet fear about the future. When my parents are no longer here, I know that responsibility will fall to me. I'm lucky to have a very understanding husband, but even with that support, it's a heavy thing to carry. Addiction doesn't just take from the person in it, it takes from everyone around them. It reshapes families. It creates a lifetime of worry, resentment, guilt, and grief, all while love still remains. At the end of the day, she is my sister. I love her, even when I don't like her, even when I feel angry, even when I feel like I've given too much of myself. That's the truth of it. Love doesn't disappear. It just becomes more complicated. I just wish people understood that. I wish people in glass houses wouldn't throw stones. Not every family wins the lottery in life. Thanks for listening. Oh, my God. Geez. And do you know why I got emotional? Because I was just thinking of my own sister.
Yeah.
And we'll say, like, the worry she might have had for me. But this is a different thing altogether. But just, I think I felt this, my own sister might have felt in ways about me before. So I just felt from her. Yeah. I think it hit home as in, oh my God, the upset I caused my sister and my family. But Lauren, there's so much there.
There is, really, you know. And her last piece was, I just wish people understood that. And you did a really amazing, brave thing for sending that in, because it does spread awareness on what the families go through. And there's two experiences happening. You know, her sister, whose life has been consumed by drugs since she's a teenager. And that's really difficult. And that has its own story. And then this person who has had this in her life since she's 9, that's really important to note that she was 9. Like, her brain is developing, and like, it's going to go through its second major stage in adolescence, where it starts to like prune, and it's going to form new ideas about the world and really kind of like set them in, right? And I just think about family members of mine who've grown up in addiction and who might be free from the actual danger zone for years and still get panic attacks, that still get scared if there's, you know, unexpected noises or if someone doesn't answer their phone. So, like, we call this hypervigilance, right? It's when the body is set and almost stays in a state of waiting for something really bad to happen. So I just want to say that this family deserves so much support. I do want to like recommend that you get support. It's never ever too late to get support. I think it's really important that there's some like boundary set in here, and I'll chat about that in a sec. The other part, I love her. You don't even need to, like, you can see the love you have for your sister. Like, this is so, you've given so much of yourself already, we can see. And this quiet fear that you have is that when your parents die, you'll be the one that has the responsibility. And I see responsibility written all over this. I think you already have too much responsibility. I think people feel really bad when there is resentment, right? But resentment is not the same as not loving someone at all. Resentment usually comes from having too much responsibility and it overspilling. And we live in a world now where everyone's very like individual. We try and keep in our own lane. We don't have the same community networks we used to. Something as complicated as addiction or even domestic violence that we spoke about earlier needs more than one person. You know, it needs more than one person to be the support. It needs more than one person to be the lifeboat. You can't, no one person can carry the emotional toll of being someone's full support. Like, there's a pattern happening here. And like, this person said that she's always come to their aid. She's always tried to pick up the pieces. She's always tried to intervene and help. And that's massive responsibility without any reward, if that makes sense, because the person is still in addiction. I think we spoke about on a previous podcast how you can't be the rescuer. And I think this person is definitely in rescue mode, which is to be expected when this has been your life since you're 9, and it sounds like other family members get you involved for support. I think all of you, if your parents are waking up every day and straight in, something bad might happen today, they also need support. In their 70s or not, you know, like, we're all humans who deserve support and help. But I think there's a difference between abandoning someone, right, and knowing where your boundaries need to lay in order for you to be healthy and, you know, safe. We spoke before as well about like how, you know, empathy is, or safety is more important than empathy. You know, you have to provide your safety first, and that includes emotional safety. I think if anything is a common theme on today's podcast, is that like emotional and physical safety are both as important as the other. So yeah, it's just about figuring out a way that she can exist in your life, and you don't even need to explain how much you love her because you can see it. You've dedicated your whole life to her, and I can only imagine you wouldn't be able to fit into an email how much that's taken from your life. You know, you said like events and memories, but it's so much more than that, isn't it? I can imagine there's been so many sleepless nights, so much grief of what your life has looked like so far. But I want to say this is really, really, really hard. Is there anything you want to say from the other side of it? Because obviously I can see that made you emotional as well.
Oh, I just felt... I felt a lot of guilt on my own behalf that the worry I put through my own family. And I know, like, that I did. And they're very forgiving of everything that went on. But I suppose, when reading it, and I read over, but I think reading it out loud, yeah, or reading it, I don't think I could rely. I think, you know what, when you're in the grips of addiction, you think they don't care about me anyway. So for her sister, she probably just thinks they don't really care about me. Yeah. She's no idea how worried they're about her. And it's funny because and you know yourself, with sudden death, you're nearly waiting for something bad to happen. Like, my sister rang me today during the show and I thought, who's dead? And she was like, just wanted to talk, because she didn't realise she knew that we'd been on air, because she didn't realise I was here. And I remember there, I couldn't get through to my mother a couple of months ago, and straight away I was like, my mother, something's after happening. And the panic, I was crying to her on the phone when she answered. She was like, oh, I was walking. It's okay, Brenda. But you know, she said, can I just say this? And she wasn't saying it like to hurt me or anything, but she said, Brenda, like, there was days when you didn't answer the phone to me, and like, I rushed up to Cork to try and find you and drove around for hours.
You have such honest conversations, don't you?
Yeah, we do. Yeah,
you do. You're really open.
She's great. And when I was running away from her, and like, I was hiding in her those days that I didn't want to see her because I didn't want her to catch me in the act, or I was too ashamed, I didn't care that my mother was frantic with worry around Cork, because it was probably like substance abuse, probably drinking or taking tablets. And I think maybe when her sister's in it, and I'm not standing up for her sister, she is so unaware of the hurt that she's causing. Because I was.
Yeah.
I was. When my mom said that to me after, about not answering the phone to her and the worry she had, I felt terrible after. I was like, oh my God, I never really thought of that.
Yeah.
I never really thought of that. Because I would have thought, oh, she just tried to ring me and she was okay. If my mother hadn't answered me that day, I was over in London at the time. In my head, I was like, I'm going to get a flight now home and see that everything all right.
Yeah.
The head would go. The head just goes.
And that's all the emotional side. Like, I think it's important to note as well the biological grips addiction has.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
In that moment, that's what it feels like.
But that's it.
You have to.
Yeah. And I don't, you know what? If this girl's sister hears this email, and wouldn't it be a great thing if she did to realise, and I'm sure she's told her how much she's hurt, but I mean, goodness, if I was even still in addiction and my sister wrote an email like this and I heard it being discussed on a podcast, I'd be, oh my God.
Mm.
Oh, I'd feel terrible. So I don't think that the sister in her 50s, she doesn't want to be like addicted to drugs. Addicted to drugs or an alcoholic or abusing any substance, no one wants to be doing that.
Absolutely.
That's the thing. People think that they do. She doesn't want to be doing that. But unfortunately, whether it be trauma in the past that she got addicted, or genetics or what is it, but I don't think she probably understands at all. And you'd love, like, and I'm all about, there is always hope. I feel so sad for the parents in their 70s.
Yeah, me too.
I feel so sad. And imagine to waking up. And like, I think, did I say it to you in the last podcast I did? I'll never forget when I went into treatment the first night, with the time my mother came to see me after the first week, which she said, you know, the night you went into treatment, she said, that was the first good night's sleep I got in ages. And I actually was thinking to myself, but sure, you should have been distraught that I was like,
this is what
I
mean.
I was like, no, you're not upset. Like, I was just, because I could sleep, I knew you were safe.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my
Definitely.
God.
This person and her family, when hopefully they access help, and look, if they need any numbers or anything like that, you can reach out. But
yeah,
I think the main thing is to understand that there needs to be an emotional boundary put in place where you're not holding the weight of what your sister might do, because two things can be true at once. Like, Brenda just gave a little snippet of what it's like on the other side. You're unaware, you're so caught up in the world of addiction, and with that does come a lot of destruction, and it does come a lot of hurt. And then on the other side, it's your job to mind you and your circle, and you can't, like, I think time has shown in your own case that every time you do, you're just putting out tiny fires, but they're just igniting right back up again, do you know? Because your sister needs to be the one to out in that fire, and her life might look one way or the other. It might be filled with hope, or this might be the rest of her life. But you can't tell the future, and you need to give yourself the best quality of life that you can, while also loving her, while also figuring out a way that those two things can exist together. And that will look different for everyone. I've spoken before about how that needed to look a certain way for me, but I have so much compassion for this person. You know, like, it just, it's really, really hard to even read. I think we can feel it here in the room.
Yeah, definitely.
But I can only imagine what it's like to live it.
Definitely. And you know what, before I finish up, when she started off the email about listening to the voice messages, and this girl, like, you look at that email and all the hurt and the pain, so lovely in the voice messages.
Yeah.
Oh,
you can tell.
And you're like, I'm reading that and I'm like, oh my God, when she was messaging me that day, I remember being in Dublin and I was replying to her. I was like, she was so nice to me and complimentary, but she was, I suppose, complimentary about the podcast, how much it helped her and everything. Amazing. And that's my greatest passion and joy. It's when someone, look, I'm happy out now if someone uses my Be Perfect code or my Voodoo code, but when someone tells me that your podcast helped me,
and
it's like for your job,
Brenda.
For your job as well, if someone, it's my biggest passion, and that's what the whole podcast is about. I am so grateful for what the podcast has achieved in the last year.
I'm proud.
I'm very proud. I got emotional thinking about it earlier because of what it gives to people.
Oh, and it does.
I've made absolutely no money from this. I've poured thousands, and I'm not joking, the amount of money I poured into this. And there was nights when I was flying back and forth from London last year, and I never forget my mother walking in looking at me kind of like, Brenda, are you going to be okay? Because I thought she would be worried, like, that I was overdoing it. And I was like, girl, it's going to pay off. She goes, I know it will.
What
and
legacy.
It's starting to pay off now.
What a legacy, though.
Yeah, no, it's my biggest, biggest passion. And it's how it helps people.
And it does.
To receive, do you know what it is as well? It's for people to come on the podcast and share, you know, if someone's like, oh, I've never shared this, but I'm telling you now, I'm honoured for someone to say something like that to me, or for someone to feel they can trust in me sending me an email like that, that this girl did. Oh my God, you want to send that to me? There's no better honour than someone to confide in you. Also, do you know what? My sister-in-law always say it, like, you could tell Brenda anything because it's probably happened to her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or you could say, like, there's nothing that'll shock me. And I've always been that friend where, and like, it's either happened to me or...
Or you've known someone, you've heard this story before.
Or even
no,
a friend,
full
like,
of empathy, you are.
But you only learn empathy through something yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think empathy is just such a special quality.
It is.
And people want to open up to you if you don't have empathy.
No, I think, like you said, there's only certain people you can trust with information like this. Like, the emails you get are so vulnerable.
I know. And the messages I get, and I really, really, very honoured that people trust in me.
Yeah, you take a lot of care with them, though. I can see that. Like, these are sent to me, lads, with like codes on, and I don't even know the people who are after sending these, you know, and then she keeps them on a code. Like, you take a lot of care with the emails.
I do. Yeah. And as well, what I do is with the podcast, and anyone who's been on the podcast, I send them the episode first before it goes on air, and every single clip.
Oh, that's
for approval.
Lovely.
Yeah. But now, I know my clips can be quite dramatic. They can, like, to be fair.
No.
I do.
That's so nice. Not everyone does that.
Have to. You know, and I've been on the other side of it, and I'm like, hold on, no, you never even told me where this clip was going. So I'm like, are you okay? And I warn people, like, look, the clip is a bit dramatic there now, but we need people to listen.
No, that's
and,
the way it goes.
Oh, always. And if they want something taken out, I will never, ever, ever be like, I think you should leave that in there. No.
That's so sweet.
And I think that really relaxes people, you know?
So,
Lauren Golden, psych. Thank you so much once
Not
again.
All,
I really appreciate it.
To be here. Thank you.